they don't actually interact with the athletes that they study. They study them on paper. They study them in labs. They dissect their brains. They become material to them. They never actually interact with the athletes as living men. They're always trying to input their perspective and their hypotheses into the living man. But the only way that happens is if the living man relinquishes his responsibility of doing that. And that's what I wanted to be able to do in this film, was to show that no. You have a responsibility to yourself and others to be able to find out the information that has you either confused, gone awry, whatever that is. You have that responsibility to yourself. Because if not, then these people start speaking for you. And these people's initiatives end up with your brain on their lab table. That's what they ultimately want, is for you to become a dissection as opposed to a living man that I actually have to have a conversation with.
What's happening, beautiful people? Welcome back to the Thrive After Sports podcast. Just a quick intro today. Promise I'll keep this under 2 minutes. I really want you guys to hear this conversation that I had with Jared Audrick. This is arguably one of the most important conversations and discussions that I've ever had on this show. Jared Audrick is a former NFL player. He has a new documentary that's out called Am I Crazy? I was referred to this documentary by a good friend of mine, Kyla Zalapsky, which you'll hear me mention in the show. And what I thought was just another documentary about life after sports, life after the NFL, quickly turned into something much deeper than that. For all of you guys who play contact sports, this is a documentary about CTE and some of the myths that have been created around CTE. I won't go too deep into it, but I think this is not only important for you guys to hear this discussion, but please, please go watch this documentary. It's going to be one of the first links in the show notes, whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple or Spotify. Click the link. I recommend watching at least the trailer. You might end up watching the trailer and then just binge watching the entire documentary. It is that good. He is exposing some truths around, guys, I'll just get into it, all right? But I do recommend clicking that link and checking out the documentary, or at least the trailer, before you watch this episode, because I think our conversation will be much more impactful once you see what this documentary is about and what Jared's up to. I love you guys. You know, all the usual stuff. If you're watching on YouTube, like, comment, subscribe. Listen on Apple or Spotify, subscribe, leave a rating and review. And let's get into this episode with Jared Audrick, the creator of the documentary, Am I Crazy? Just to give you some background on why I reached out, Kyla Zalapsky, who I know was on episode or part six, I want to say, I've known her for about 5 or 6 years. And she reached out to me. She was like, you got to check this out. I started watching it. And Kyla, you know, I know Kyla's probably going to listen to this. So shout out to Kyla. She really believes in the work that I'm doing. You know, I've been helping athletes after their sport for about 5, 6 years now. I have free programming around it. Coaching services. I go into universities and speak and actually provide free coaching and things like that as well. And so, long story short, when I saw your documentary at first, I was like, oh, this is cool. This is, you know, more life after sports stuff. Like, the world needs this. And then once you started getting into talking about CTE and debunking some of the myths around CTE, that's when I was like, all right, I got to reach out to you. And so I think, you know, a good place for us to start would be just talking about how long this has been going on. So just as an example for me, you know, the movie Concussion came out, which you mentioned in the documentary, came out in 2015. At the time, I was 2 years removed from college. And as much as I hate to admit this now, I almost used that movie to put myself into a victim mode of, you know, I'm using this as an excuse. This is why I'm depressed. This is why I'm not doing anything with my life, because I have CTE. Without knowing any of the science or anything behind it. And so really the first question I have for you is, you know, obviously having your own experiences with this, what made you even want to take the time and energy to start or to produce this documentary and to get this story out?
I think the reason there's a connection, or the reason you might have felt inclined to reach out, was because I think we're hitting upon an archetype. I think we're hitting upon something that's common amongst people across sporting endeavors. And also, you know, I hear a lot of the same things about CEOs, people who have kind of been locked into a specific position and a certain mental and social framework for a long time. And once they're released from it, they almost don't have the social prerequisites to be able to infiltrate some other form of either job or role in society. And so when I played in the NFL, I played played 7 years in the NFL, 5 with the Dolphins, 2 with the Jags. And my departure from the Jaguars was kind of contentious. And I guess I've built kind of a reputation for the willingness to be a contentious person if I don't agree or believe in something, or if I do believe in something. And so we were a little contentious over a specific injury and some guaranteed money that they were holding back, that they signed a contract just like I did to agree to do some things. And so I was up in Toronto. I had bought a house in Toronto throughout my career. I would go there to train in the off season and kind of get away from football because it's not so prevalent, you know, in Toronto or in Canada in general. Everybody has a hockey story, where in America, everybody has a football story. Right? Every waiter or waitress is talking about football, you know, especially if they recognize your stature of some sort, right? Or your physical stature. So I was up in Toronto. I was trying to figure out if I wanted to be done with football. And I think I started beginning looking for like new narratives. It seems that narratives have a way of motivating people more than stats, statistics, numbers, raw data. So narratives is what I was looking for in terms of, okay, what's a new narrative? What's something a former NFL player left the game and went on to do that I respect or that I look up to? And whenever I was searching, I kept finding, you know, former football player, CTE, former football player, CTE, former football player, bankrupt, former football player, bankrupt, former football player, divorce, CTE, CTE. And it was just kind of this like a downward trajectory or spiral, if you will, that kind of was very prevalent. I shouldn't say kind of, it was very prevalent on the internet. And I was like, wait a second. And I could have been focusing on these things because it was like, you know, I don't want to become that. And so it's like, and I think it's also very clickable when you see that. And when I talk about an archetype, I think it's having a common experience that takes you through a certain story arc. And that means working hard, achieving your dreams, having some success in that, varied degrees of that, whether it's, you know, winning a high school championship, going on to play collegiate football or a collegiate sport. Some people have the privilege of going on to play professional. And then after that, everything seems pale in comparison, right? And then you're just on this downward slope. And I saw that it kind of replicated itself in numerous spots, numerous sports. And I was like, you know, what's going on here? And so I started seeing CTE. And when I saw that, it felt like it was almost inevitable if I were to join or listen to pop culture narratives, conversations, podcasts, 60 Minutes. Boston University seemed to be a very consistent supplier of CTE awareness, if you will. And so I started looking into it. And then eventually in 2018, I was almost a year removed from the idea of playing football. I moved to Brooklyn, where all creatives have to go. I moved to Brooklyn. And, but in all honesty, there's people there trying to make stuff happen, you know, and I was there and I was trying to write a script with a local writer and director. And we have a full script still, but the long line of the script was a former NFL player the day before the biggest game of his career, a former NFL player realizes his biggest dreams will never come true. And the idea was that this football player really wanted to be an opera singer, and he had to keep it hidden because it was kind of embarrassing within a locker room setting. And so he hid it from his family, hid it from his friends, he hid it from his teammates. And he was in a away team hotel You know, they're on the road traveling and they're about to play this playoff game. And he tries to escape the hotel to go do this audition. And he can't get out. And so all these psychological, it's more of a psychological thriller, and all these supernatural things were starting to happen at the hotel that kept him locked in the hotel and he couldn't get out, essentially locked in this world of football. And so while we were writing it, I'm like, man, I want some real world valence. I want something to transfer over into the real world that, you know, there's this disease called CTE that I've obviously heard about. And I want this character, this main character, to have symptoms of CTE. And I want to intertwine that into the narrative, into the story. And so that alone spurred me to go interview Dr. Bob Stern at Boston University, because they seem to be the loudest promoters of this disease process awareness. And so we asked them if we could bring cameras and interview them and what we were trying to do. And we did. And when I was in the room asking him questions, and the very little scientific information that I received from him, I was kind of alarmed. And I was like, wait, what's happening? And especially when I left the office, I said, what was that? Like, it didn't seem like a scientist. There was kind of like a lot of stories being told, but it just seemed like there were a lot of clauses in his speech that we can't say this for sure. I'm like, wait a second, but he's going everywhere across the nation telling people that it's a deadly disease. And I'm like, there's something wrong here. I'm like, I want to look into this more. And this is what I want to do. I don't want to write a script and hope that in 5, 10, 15, 20 years that somebody picks it up and buys this. I want to be in the room. I want to be doing this. I want to be doing research. I want to be reading people's literature. I want to be reading people's books and then going to interview them. And that's what we did. And, you know, I've gone through... We've gone through 4 editors, 5 years, multiple pieces of scientific literature, numerous pieces of scientific literature, reading other scientists' books, getting a hold of people, not getting a hold of people. And that's how this all started. So hopefully I answered your question.
It did. So that interview with Dr. Stern, what you're saying, that was the catalyst for you to go on this journey to create this 8-part documentary. And you know, it's so funny. It's not funny at all, actually, but I say that because I watched that episode recently and I think his behavior spoke volumes. First of all, props to you for even keeping your composure as well as you did. I know you probably wanted to reach across that table, but just the way he was speaking to you was so, you know, patronizing. And then you could tell he was visibly uncomfortable. And like you said, visibly had something to hide. And it really, you know, points to the fact that what you said, there's something going on here, that there's a problem being created around CTE and a narrative that's being created with the intention to try to solve the problem. And it's clearly a money play. And this ties back into Kyla and why I respect what Kyla is doing. For those who don't know, Kyla Zalapsky, her brother, Sarli, was a professional hockey player who took his own life because of a sense of hopelessness around traumatic brain injury, because he didn't have the full story. And so I want to come back to, you know, a little bit of your story when you were done playing, before you started diving into the research. I know you said you were looking for just stories that weren't related to going bankrupt or, you know, having CTE or domestic abuse, but what did you experience personally as you were coming off of your NFL career? And what was that transition into, you know, as we say, the real world like for you?
Yeah, I think I've been pretty resistant to a lot of things in my life. And I think one of them is the real world. Sometimes I think that phrase, into the real world, is almost like this acceptance of like, guess I got to go work at Enterprise, you know? And so it's like, I've just been reluctant to accept that. And I see that, you know, that's all that I wanted to do was kind of rub that off on other people. You know, not that they need to be some contrarian or, you know, do interviews in their car. They can go get an office, you know, they can go get a cubicle, you know. But like, you know, whether I'm using the Lincoln lawyer as an example or not, like, I think I tend to be a little bit more comfortable in, I don't mind being in different spaces, you know, and doing what other people, I guess, need more of a square box to do. or to reframe themselves. And I don't want to bash that, that people need more structure in order to feel good after sports. But what I had went through, not just feel good, but I think what you use, the word you use is thrive. And it almost felt like I needed less of a box in order for me to thrive. And so, because football started to feel like a box at the end of my career. And so what I had went through, I always tell the story of when I was up in Toronto. Toronto seems to be, you know, a really big catalyst for change for me, and just a change of perspective. Like whenever you can step outside of America for a second, and kind of Canada seemed like this, especially Toronto and like Montreal seemed like this halfway between like America and Europe, where you still have like, we have men, older men wearing leather shoes, sipping espressos, right? But you also have like overweight sports fans, you know, gargling hot dogs and soda, you know, where that's more like America, where, you know, you also have like leather shoes and like in shape older men who, you know, look refined. So it feels like Canada is like that in between place. And so it's a nice perspective from America, and it's just, you know, a hop, a jump and a skip away from my home. And so, I was up in Toronto, and my brother played at Rutgers University. We have different moms, and in the doc, you can't really notice that. I didn't make it a big thing, but my brother's in it, and we grew up in two different homes, but he ended up playing at Rutgers, and he's, I think, 6 years old, younger than me. And so, he was doing, in the winter, I think of 2017, he was doing one of those third or fourth or fifth tier, like all-star games as a senior, leaving, going into the NFL. And it wasn't actually an all-star game. It was actually just a series of practices. It was just like a showcase. And so he was doing that, and he had called me up, and I was in Toronto at the time, just kind of training, going to coffee shops, reading a lot of books, listening to a lot of different university lectures. I was really close to enrolling or just like sitting in on classes at the University of Toronto. And I was just listening to a lot of different things at the time. I was taking a lot of new information. But I was still working out pretty consistently. I got really in shape, you know, just from all that time of working out. And I just kept doing two-a-days until I knew what else to do with my time. And so my brother calls me up, and he seemed a little timid in his voice. And he's like, hey, I think I'm done. I don't think I'm going to try to go any further. And I go, oh, really? He's like, yeah. And he had done a one-on-one drill, and he slipped and he fell, and he heard a coach yell, you know, get the fuck up. I'm like, get up, you know, get up, Audrey, get up, Penix, Audrey. And so he said he realized in that moment, he's just like, nah, this, I don't want to be the guy that continues playing football, but knows that he'll probably never make it past practice squad. Like, I don't want to be the rag doll of the football team. Like, there's other things about me that I want to explore or expand into. I know I have capacity outside of this. And I said, damn. And at that time, I wasn't sure if I wanted to be done or not. I was still entertaining deals and offers from other teams. And I still had an agent. I still was training, you know. And so I just kind of sat back when I heard that. And I said to him, I'm like, damn, am I just, you know, so if I keep playing, am I just the dumb jock of the family? Right? He goes, you didn't know that? And I go, oh, shit. And I'm like, damn. And that kind of hit me because, you know, I saw that my brother, I felt my brother had like the balls, right? The balls to just kind of walk away from something that obviously is very well socially supported, not just in a family, but in society. You know, that if you have this opportunity to play in the NFL or make money playing, you know, a child's game, some people say, that you should go do it. And so that was one thing that, you know, really impacted me in my decision, where I started like really taking into account what I was doing. I think it it really brought a sense of, that's when I really started building my own self-discipline, more than what was imposed on me, and more than what was given to me throughout my sporting career. You know, you can kind of just plug yourself in to, you know, the Penn State program. You can plug yourself into the NFL kind of, I guess you would call it a conveyor belt, if you will, where you have this expected behavior for 7 months, 8 months out of the year. You have an off season that's kind of free, but then there's still kind of expectancies throughout that off season, and you don't have to build any structures, or, you know, disciplinary structures yourself. You just have to adhere to it. And I felt that, you know, after years of, you know, doing a lot of studying and trying to figure things out, that was one of the main mechanisms of adhering to narratives that, I think allows people to find a one-way track into something like CTE, right? It's kind of this kind of conveyor belt. Well, this is what happens and you do it. And then this is what happens and you do it. And then when you get into the post-career, it's like hitting your head is bad. And if you're struggling, you have this. And it felt like it was very easy to walk into CTE and kind of relinquish any responsibility of building my own structures of discipline and of habitual behavior that, you know, allowed me to thrive after sports.
Jared, I think there's a lot that's important about what you just shared, for many different reasons. I think what you said about, you know, just systems that are easy to plug yourself into, and getting outside of that box, I think that's important for people to hear, because, you know, not just football players, but so many athletes think, well, I'm not good at anything else, so now that I can't compete, I'll just be a coach, or, you know, I'll just try to get into an athletic department, or I'll be an agent, and all these, you know, stereotypical former athlete careers, or I'll just get into sales. I'll go work at Enterprise. Like you said, I can't tell you over the years how many athletes who have come to me telling me, someone told me I should get into sales, so now I'm working at Enterprise in a management trainee program, but I don't want to do this, and I need help figuring out what I really want to do. So I appreciate you going into, you know, you don't have to just go fit into some box after you're done playing, or stay in the box, you know, of your sport. You can explore different things and really create a life for yourself. I could talk about that all day with you, but I want to get back to this documentary. Something that really stood out to me, man, you know, in the CTE research part of it was, the conversation of tau protein. And like I said, you know, the way they presented it in the movie Concussion, I was scared shitless watching that movie. Just that feeling of, oh damn, I know I have this and this is inevitable and it's only going to get worse until this leads to my ultimate demise. And I thought it was so important, the moment where they showed that the tau protein, which for those who don't know is the culprit of CTE, they say that that's what causes it. It's something that happens just naturally in every human being and comes with age. It's not a symptom of playing contact sports. Can you talk a little bit about just having that knowledge? Because I was blown away. That was a game changer for me. Like when they shared that with you, what was your response to that? How did you feel when you figured that out or when they shared that with you?
Well, my natural response a lot of times, and this is what I'm, you know, working on myself, is anger. But I think anger is what perpetuated me to make this documentary for over 5 years. That, you know, I went through these, you know, kind of ebbs and flows of anger when you're finding out all this information that you feel is almost withheld from you, in a way. But it's not anybody else's responsibility to give it to you. It's your own. You have to go find it. And that's what I wanted to do here. And it's like, the more you research and study and figure out, and the more you hold yourself accountable, the more you find out that, you know, nobody else has a responsibility to empower you, right? Unless somebody's saying, hey, I'll be your coach, or, you know, your parents, there's something inherent there, in taking on those roles. But the world doesn't owe you anything. And I think that was one thing that I started figuring out when I started hearing all this information, when I started hearing that tau protein is kind of, you know, it's something that comes along with aging. And that's what I say in the film. We kept that in the film, was like, it almost seems like we've built this large sociological perspective that we shouldn't deteriorate, right? It's like we all die. We all know that. And so sometimes this is on a larger philosophical plane, but it seems like we have secreted out of the language that allows us to accept and welcome death, and that the medical industry and the anti-aging industry has almost convinced us that we don't need to die. And it's like, no, that's not the case. You know, now we would all probably like to extend our lives, you know, as much as we can, and for it to be fruitful and have, you know, quality of life. But when I started figuring out that tau protein, when I was being told and I was learning that tau protein was more of it was available to everyone, right? And that people who had it on their brains were probably older, and that the category of people that had it the most was 70 plus year old women. And so I started thinking, well, then why isn't this talked about on national television? Why isn't there 60 minutes about how many 70-year-old women are coming down with Alzheimer's or dementia, or even just building up of tau protein in the brain? And then I thought, well, I never wanted to buy a sneaker because of a 70-year-old woman, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's the thing, is that you can't create markets with things that are, you know, I guess, unattractive to different populations or groups of people. And it felt that the athlete was almost being used in a way, and being able to promote a disease that has inconclusive science behind it and evidence. And so I guess I felt angry when I found that out. I was angry because it felt like there was a market being built off of ignorance, that it seemed like the understanding of tau protein, neurofibular tangles, and just the concept of chronic traumatic encephalopathy, you know, beyond the acronym that's easy for everyone to say, it just felt like ivory tower information. It felt like academics who have a very unique and niche understanding of the brain and its disease processes were using that niche information to then project it onto people who have never been to the moon, people who have never seen the inside of a brain or a skull, and that they had this privileged position and they were abusing it. Not educating people, but scaring people. And that was the biggest thing that I got upset about.
Mm-hmm. I remember there was a moment, and by the way, forgive me, man, I haven't even mentioned, I'll record it in the intro. The name of the documentary is Am I Crazy? Which I think speaks volumes about what's actually, you know, from episode to episode, what it's actually about. Why don't we take a moment to tell people where they can find it? It'll be linked in the show notes and all that as well. But what's the best way for people to watch this?
Yeah, the best way for people to watch this is to, my team will be upset with me about it, but I always give people the YouTube link because YouTube seems very approachable. We have a website where Am I Crazy links to thresholdsite.com. So that's threshold, SITE.com. Where we host the documentary as an 8-part series. And if you click those links, it'll take you to YouTube. So you can put into YouTube, Am I Crazy CTE documentary. It should pop up, and there's an 8-part series there. And there's other clips and surrounding content that we're adding to it, as well as it's already there. We've already been flagged multiple times because of the way that we're presenting CTE and recognizing the talk and affiliation with suicide from Aaron Hernandez and Junior Seau. And we're taking, we did was highlight the news articles and the local news stations that covered Junior Seau taking his life and Aaron Hernandez taking his life. But apparently on the YouTube algorithms, they don't want you talking about suicide in a certain way. And I don't know what way that is. And there's very specific language that says, if you're not respecting the families of suicide, respect is a sliding scale. It's a subjective interpretation of what respect is. So it seems like some legalese language, but hopefully you guys can find it. Am I Crazy? CTE documentary is where you can find it on YouTube.
So for those listening, the first link in the show notes will be to go to the website. So make sure you support Jared and his team by going to the website instead of going through YouTube, because of course YouTube is owned by Google, which is a wicked corporation, arguably, and they take it down someday. So if you go to the website, you'll be able to stay tuned and make sure you don't miss out on watching this thing, because this is a must watch. You know, I think back to when the moment where you actually went to the CTE conference and you spoke, you went up and spoke. Was that before or after your one-on-one interview with Dr. I'm assuming this was afterwards. He had already spoken to you.
Yeah, I had two interviews with Bob Stern, and then I had two times that I went to the CTE conference. So I went to two of them. And so honestly, in retrospect, I kind of get confused on, was that the first time I went or the second time I went? Is that the first time I went or the second? Because we've done so much editing, right, in like 4 years, where we've used different interactions each time. So I did, the first time I sat down with Dr. Bob Stern, it was before I went to the CTE conference. And then I attended a CTE conference. Attended a CTE conference. And then I went and spoke to a lot of different other doctors, scientists, some were on camera, some were off camera. And then I returned to, I think I went back to the second CTE conference and then spoke to Dr. Bob Stern again in our final showdown, if you will, in our final interview. And so yeah, I mean, as you can see in the film, you know, when I walk into his office, he calls me the guy. He's like, oh, the guy. And I'm like, oh. And if you think about that, you know, and I probably look too far into things, but if you think about it mythologically or archetypally, the guy, when you do that, when you crown somebody with something like that, you're making them the stranger. The stranger is the guy who has a different opinion or point of view that walks into a town that has like a stale authority, and that the stranger comes in to shake up the authority that has gone stale or awry. And I think one of the best examples of this, one is Christ, but you know, there's a film that shows this I'm blanking on one of the High Plains Drifter. High Plains Drifter is a Clint Eastwood movie where you never know his name, but he comes into the town as a stranger, and it almost at the end of the film, you almost believe he's a ghost because he's not attached to anything in the town, and he highlights how much the authority of that town has gone awry or stale. And so it seemed like he kind of crowned me, like he gave me multiple times a certain amount of authority. And I think that was done in a way to kind of, deactivate me, to try to, like you said, patronize. Or, you know, somehow stroke me, so that I would, be on the same side. I think that's kind of what the initiative was, but yeah, I forget what the question was, but it's been an interesting journey.
Yeah. And that's actually what made me bring that up, because to your point, you could tell from the get-go that, and I hate to keep focusing on this part because there's so many other important parts about the documentary. But the reason I think these last couple of episodes were so important is because it really brings everything to a head and shows why you're doing the work you're doing because of the way that he acted. Even at, you know, the conference that you went to, you went up there and spoke, introduced yourself, and you asked him very plainly, what was the purpose of your presentation? You know, he's cracking jokes, he's sharing information, but especially as former athletes or people who played, you know, contact sports, okay, what are we supposed to do with that? You're sharing information, you're saying this leads to inevitable decline, but how am I supposed to apply this into my life, especially if I'm concerned that I may have this thing? And the way he responded to your question, that's why I say it really ties the whole documentary in nicely, because his elusiveness answers the question of there's something shady going on here and he's not willing to talk about it. And it's almost like even though you didn't get direct answers, he answered the question for you. He revealed, you know, what we were all thinking all along. There's even one point where you asked him, what was the point of your, and he starts dancing around and doesn't answer the question and says, Jared, comprehends things or has a way of looking at things beyond my realm of comprehension. What does that even mean? you know?
Yeah, I think what he's implying is that I'm crazy. I think that's what he's implying. I think he's implying is that Jared says things beyond my comprehension. So I think we can all agree that he's quite brilliant. And I think that was another form of, you know, kind of deactivating the legitimacy by stroking me in a way. It's a form of doublespeak where you're getting a backhanded compliment. And somebody can compliment you, oh, you look nice today, and not mean it, right? And that's where tone comes into play. And I think what you're highlighting in our one-on-one interview, as well as when I went to the conference, the tone in which they took with me. And I think it's kind of natural from the different conferences that I've been at. There's a paternalistic point of view that a lot of scientists take because they don't actually interact with the athletes that they study. They study them on paper. They study them in labs. They dissect their brains, right? They become material to them. They don't become a living man. They never actually interact with the athletes as living men, right? They're always trying to input their perspective and their hypotheses into the living man. But the only way that happens is if the living man relinquishes his responsibility of doing that. And that's what I wanted to be able to do in this film, was to show that, no. You have a responsibility to yourself and others to be able to find out the information that has you either confused, gone awry, whatever that is. You have that responsibility to yourself. Because if not, then these people start speaking for you. And these people's initiatives end up with your brain on their lab table. That's what they ultimately want, is for you to become a dissection as opposed to a living man that I actually have to have a conversation with.
Mm. Wow. That's damn. You left me speechless on that one. That's a great point. They want you to donate your brain and become part of the narrative to continue their fundraising efforts and continue to monetize this thing, or eventually monetize it, rather than get the help that you need or get answers that you're looking for. I know that, so I'll just say this, mission accomplished, even though, you know, I know you may feel, especially at the time during the recordings, you're probably pissed off, and you were visibly pissed off a few times that I'm not getting answers. But I think, would you say that the lack of getting answers, or the answers that you didn't get, or the behavior of people like Bob Stern did answer your question? Or are you still on the pursuit for more knowledge? Will you be putting out more documentaries or more information on this, or what's next for you on this journey?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really responding to the wave of reactions and responses to the doc, because it's something that I was like talking about for like 2-3 years, and I hated, you know, talking about it. I actually watched some of your content prior to hopping on this call, and one thing I heard you talk about is that people can, you know, kind of, I forget the word that you use, either configure or ideate, but not take action. And so I felt like that you were talking about how people fall into, I want to make money, or I want to change this, I want to do these things. And, you know, it kind of, it stops them from taking action. I felt like I got to that point, then I took action in trying to make the film, reading people's literature, contacting them, and then doing it. And I honestly thought at the beginning of all this that this was going to be a 1 or 2 year process, not a 5 year process. And the longer I went, the better, the more clear things became in the expression of the documentary, and the more clear things became in my conversations with neuroscientists and others, practitioners. But I also felt crazier and crazier for dumping more and more time and money into this, because it seemed like it would never end. And so I wanted to get to a point where I was like, okay, this has just got to go out. I want to express this. I want to engage people about what I really think, instead of withholding it. And it's like, how can I justify withholding this when I think it can actually help people? How can I justify harboring this or trying to sell it to a larger entity if I know that it can help people, right? Then I would just be trying to get my money back from what I did for 5 years. And it's just like, that feels scummy, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, I got to a point, I'm like, all right, dude, if we can't find a deal where it's going to get larger distribution, well, let's just put it out on YouTube, and I'm willing to deal with it as a grassroots thing, you know, because I want to talk about it. And I wanted to be honest, and it felt like a, you know, kind of just this massive weight inside my chest that I wanted to get out. And so I think now that that's done, it's really engaging people like yourself. I've engaged more academics than I have people in the entertainment realm. Academics have been very interested with this. Penn State reached back out and they're considering using this as my final three credits to get my diploma. The University of Washington University of St. Louis, which is considered the Harvard of the Midwest. they've used the documentary already multiple times and hope to do it again this year as classwork. And then other universities like University of Michigan, I'm currently speaking to, and they want to put it in their newsletter and that I go engage their team of neuroscientists that have started building out a brain bank of their own. And so, more academics have really come around this idea because, brain health, brain banks, and brain study is a growing, unfortunately, it's a growing industry. I think it's fortunate and unfortunate. It's kind of this double-edged sword that the more that we get into it, the more we incentivize the dissection of the soul and we kind of put it into the brain. And then we try to make remedies to correct people's behaviors through a scientific lens when I think some of that should be done through a moral lens. But that's a whole other conversation. So what's next? What's next is having conversations like this. What's next is continuing to make, content and whatnot. But I appreciate podcasts like this because it's something that I know that I couldn't do or that I wouldn't do. Because of the regularity of podcasts, the nature of the repetitive nature of building and stacking up your podcasts, which I heard you talking about getting past the average number of 17 already. And congratulations to getting in the hundreds.
Thank you.
I think that's not something I want to do. I like really gathering a lot of information, making an argument in the dark, and then eventually presenting it. So then I'm in store for another 10-year project. We'll see what happens. I'm talking with one of my former teammates, Brandon Marshall. I've contributed in as a writer as well as a live action contributor on his show, I Am Athlete. And I was trying to, broker a deal where he could connect some of his audience to the documentary because we both seem to want to affect people in a positive way about mental health, which I think can sometimes become a very, very watered down term and applied everywhere. So I wanted to show my journey of trying to take responsibility of my mental health as opposed to waiting for somebody to give me a solution. Whether it's the NFL or a team of scientists at a university. So I think it's really just speaking about this because I think CTE and life after sports is a trope or an archetype that I don't think is going anywhere. And I think people are going to have to figure out how to deal with it. And I see athletes have such an opportunity to not only have a new career or perspective on life after sports, but really use their experience to not allow their experience to depreciate their value, but increase their value to society. But you really need to find the right mechanisms to help them do that. And it's finding the right language, it's finding the right people, and it's not being afraid to fail. And using all of that, and finding the right metaphors and analogy to transfer that information and that and knowledge of experience. So it's helping people do that. Whichever way I can.
Well, I think you're doing a great job, man. Not that you need my validation, but, I feel the need to share that with you. And I do appreciate everything that you do and that you'll continue to do. One final question for you. I know we're coming up on time. I don't want to keep you all day. And before I ask you this, I just want to preface it by saying one thing that I consistently hear from you, not just throughout the documentary, but today as well, you talk about taking responsibility and being accountable for yourself and for your own life. You know, all the opportunities that you've had, especially watching the documentary, there are many opportunities where you could have gone into victim mode. Never saw you become a victim, never saw you complain. It was always taking responsibility, being accountable. So for those current and former athletes who are tuning in, is there any advice that you would share for them if they may be feeling lost, not knowing what they want to do next? What do you want to say for those people right now trying to figure out who they are outside of the jersey?
Yeah, take as much responsibility for the position that you're in as possible. You know, what did I do or not do to allow myself to get to this position? Because that's really the only thing that is going to allow yourself to become empowered. If you look at it from a perspective of what people have done to me, what the league I played in has done to me, what my coach has done to me, what my parents have done to me. Well, you're looking at it from a perspective that somebody else is going to resurrect your mind, body, or soul. And that's not anybody else's responsibility. That's yours. And the more you make it other people's responsibility, the more you're left to other people's devices or goals or initiatives. And I think that's kind of what the documentary shows. And I think in general, whether I'm talking to professional athletes or collegiate or anybody else that, you know, might have the time, resources, or access, is, you know, I guess my call to action is like, reach out to neuroscientists, right? Start to build your own catalog of research. I think professional athletes, I always imagine professional athletes recreating, you know, MTV Cribs, right? Where it should be MTV Compounds, right? Where, you know, this is my, instead of like, oh, I keep the aqua, I keep the Fiji water in the fridge, you know, I got my Lambo over here, you know, I got an elevator in the crib, my G, you know, instead, you know, kind of move it into a space of like, hey, this is my neuroscientist. This is my researcher. This is my naturopath. This is my functional medicine doctor. I got a team of people behind me that are producing and finding our own research so that when I compare notes with people outside of here or larger entities that I'm making money from or plan to play with or against, well, then I have some sense of myself in the world and that I've built something that I can compare notes with instead of just taking on other people's information. And that's essentially what I did throughout this documentary process is that I started building a team of people that I was like, I want to find out this thing. And it's like, all right, well, let's look for that in research catalogs. So neuroscientists need bodies and bodies kind of need neuroscientists, right? And so that's the thing is that, you know, neuroscientists need bodies, not just to dissect, but to also enrich and empower their research, right? So there's a symbiotic relationship there that I think a lot of athletes are missing out on, especially professional athletes or even university athletes that are there where the neuroscientists are usually at these universities. It's build relationships with them, right? Start to build a catalog of your own research so that when new research or alarming stories start to come out, you can compare notes instead of just taking on the most popular narrative and accepting that as your fate or future. So,
wow. Damn, man, that's a perfect way for us to wrap up. Great advice. Jared, thank you again for coming on, man. And thank you for making this documentary. I think it's important for many different reasons, which we discussed today. All the information will be in the show notes. One more time, anything else that you want to point people to aside from the show, if they want to follow you? I know you're a humble dude. You probably don't give a damn whether or not people follow you. It's more about the work, but anything you want to leave people with about how they can get in contact or any of that good stuff?
Yeah, there's this guy named Max Baer who's on the internet in some places. You might want to check him out. He has some off-the-wall things to say sometimes. So you got to watch out. You got to discern for yourself what's good to listen to and what's not. But Max Baer 75 says some things. I think he's mainly on Instagram, but he's out there and he's, you know, he, you know, to graph from another online personality, I think it's true to say about Max Baer is that, you know, he may not be right, but he definitely ain't lying, you know? And so I think, you know, look out for him, but just in general, man, it's, have some discernment and compare notes with the large narratives. Don't be afraid to localize your efforts and, you know, build teams around you, you know, in your own communities and in your own households, and compare notes with the big scary stories that are always going to come down that information and news pipeline.
There it is. Jared, thank you again, man. Everybody listening, please go check out this documentary. It's one of the best things you'll ever see about life after sports and one of the best documentaries I've ever seen, period. So go check that out ASAP. This is must watch, not just for athletes, but for anybody. Appreciate it, man. I'm gonna stop recording. I'm gonna wrap it up here. But hey, so if you made it to the end of this episode, first of all, thank you for tuning in. And I wanted to take a moment just to thank Kyla Zalapsky again. I know we mentioned her at the beginning of this episode, but everyone just Google Kyla Zalapsky. It's K-Y-L-A. Last name is Z-A-L-A. Kyla Zalapsky. Just sound it out, okay? Kyla, thank you so much if you're watching this. Kyla was the first person to tell me that I didn't have to feel like a victim because of CTE. She shared the story of her brother with me, Sarli Zalapsky, like we mentioned in the podcast, who took his own life because he felt hopeless around traumatic brain injury. And when Kyla told me that, I was at a point where I was starting to become a victim in my own mind, thinking that CTE was inevitable. And because of my conversation with her and all the research that she shared with me over the years, I started looking at CTE differently and realizing what was really going on. Kyla is the reason that this interview with Jared even happened. She sent me his documentary. I watched it. I reached out to Jared and he was kind enough to give me his time. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Kyla. I love you. I appreciate you and all the work that you do. I just wanted to give you a special shout out before we really wrap this thing up. Last but not least, for those of you guys who are here for the first time, welcome. Please like the video if you're watching on YouTube and subscribe to this channel. I have a lot more great interviews coming up. I think you'll really be surprised with some of the guests that I have and some of the stories that they have to share. This is important work. If you're listening on Apple or Spotify, please just leave a 5-star review, subscribe, and share this episode or any other episodes out with someone who needs to hear it. I am on a mission to help as many athletes transition out of their sport and have successful lives after their careers, and not just survive, but thrive in everything that they do. And you guys know I do that in a myriad of ways. It's not just the podcast, it's not just the books, but I do offer coaching as well. I want to encourage you guys to go back and look at some of the testimonials of former athletes that I've worked with to help them through their transitions. Guys, don't hesitate to reach out. Visit TajDeshaun.com. That's where you can find all the free resources, not just the podcast and the books, but access to me. You can schedule a free call with me. I'm not going to get on that call and try to sell you on buying a group program. I have a ton of free access and scholarships for athletes to work with me. So utilize those resources, guys. And last but not least, I definitely want to encourage you guys to grab my first book, Thrive After Sports. You can just go on Amazon, type in Taj Deshaun. I have multiple books on there, but I always try to point people to Thrive After Sports just because I think that's the book that I look at as the most impactful that can help an athlete through the transition. I know a lot of people have read that book and been helped through the transition without ever having to speak to me or even listening to my podcast. And I just got this recording today that I wanted to share with you guys from my guy Benjamin Van Buren. He's a soccer player, former soccer player at Mercy College, went on to play professional soccer and just recently retired. And he read my book while he was playing, but then read it again after he retired. And this is what he had to say about it. I love you guys. I'll see you in the next episode. Peace. And here's Ben.
Yo, Taj, it's Ben from Athlete Mentor. Just want to let you know, obviously your book came in and I read it a while ago when I was still in season, and it didn't really hit me then. I was like, yeah, cool, it's a great book, whatever. And then I went to Spain and I was playing for a team over there, and then I left because my grandmother was sick, so I came home, and now it's hitting me. So I read it again. Dude, that thing is phenomenal. Like, if you could put this audio on a case study on your website, I would do it, because it's crazy how, like, the skills and attributes that student athletes have just go missing. And it's like, yeah, you're playing sports, you have all this adrenaline, all this hype about you, all you're working out all the time, you feel good, and then out of nowhere it's like, oh cool, I'm done, you know, like I have nothing to work for really. So then you get into sales, you get into other things, and you find something that you want to build for yourself, and that's what you get that excitement and that adrenaline from again. So yeah, man, I just want to let you know that I read it again and it really hit me now that I'm kind of officially retired as a player. But yeah, that's all I wanted to say, man. I hope you're doing well. Hope you're living the life. I'm actually on Long Island now. I'm going to go to Stony Brook basketball game. So at your alma mater. But yeah, dude, phenomenal work. And let's obviously stay in touch and maybe get on a call soon. Talk to you later. Peace.